In the studio, I've got Stephanie Philp. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
So Stephanie's in here every 4 weeks to get inside your mind.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. And Stephanie's a coach, does neuro-linguistic programming training and practitioner.
Yep.
And today we're going to continue a discussion that started last week on Monday when Lani was here talking about self-efficacy, how you could, in the context of hearing some employers talk about difficulties they were having with their staff. And we talked about it another time during the week with someone else was in, but now you're here as well, Stephanie. We're going to talk about it again. You actually have a background in HR.
Yeah.
Back in the day, in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was the HR manager, corporate services manager for a power company. I was learning neuro-linguistic programming and other things, and then finally went into business on my own in 1994, which will be 30 years next year.
Wow.
I'm only 29, Eddie.
You stop counting the numbers. I'm thinking of a hypothetical, which is a very common situation. Everyone's been through it where a business owner hires some staff and there's some kind of young, kind of disaffected people who've come out of school and don't know what they want out of their lives and just were sick of being kind of bossed around at school.
Yeah.
And, Stephanie, that dog. That's bad. I shouldn't be saying this on the radio. We have a dog in here. They might get put outside shortly. Anyway, so there's this scenario, and it's kind of tough because the employers feels a lot of pressure, financial pressure on the business, and if they see a staff member who's not pulling their weight, or as the phrase is, who's not doing enough work to account for the pay they're getting, then they want to motivate the staff. And in the old days, it was always you might shout at them or threaten them or coerce them in some manner. That was pretty common. Most of us had that experience. These days, the employers are saying that they get a lot of complaints if they do that, which is probably fair enough.
Mm.
Most employers and people in management positions don't get skills in motivating people or anything like that. And I think it's quite a tricky situation where you've got, you use the phrase disaffected youth. We kind of know what we mean. Directionless young people haven't figured out what they want out of life yet, and that's pretty common. In fact, I was like that to a degree. How do you cope with that situation? It's a struggle. It's obviously a struggle for people. It's the first thing on a lot of employers' minds.
I think it's such a huge topic. But just going back to the managers, the leaders, you know, whatever you want to call them, supervisors, is my experience is that people recruit people that they think can do a job. You know, so they might be really good at, I don't know, doing spreadsheets, or they might be really good at, whatever the job is, the technical aspects of the job, right?
Yes, yep, yep.
But they can't recruit for people skills. And because people either have people skills or they haven't. And a lot of employers don't believe that you can teach people skills. You can, because that's what I do, you know?
Yeah.
But they expect him to have it, and then when they haven't, they don't really know what to do. So if these managers haven't got people skills themselves, then they're already at a disadvantage because they haven't got a clue about how to deal with any staff that might be unmotivated.
If you're a manager or a boss who hasn't themselves learnt people skills, you're not going to be able to teach it to anybody else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or even help the people that work for you.
And let's not make this feel finger-pointy. Most of us haven't been taught those sorts of skills at any stage. We get the technical stuff. I've got a degree that tells what I can do in a technical sense, but nothing about,
how to deal with other people. And I think that the problem is that most people think that they've got good communication skills. And most people are okay talking superficially, but as soon as things go wrong, they haven't got the skills to deal with it because they've never been taught.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found that when I was in HR, I did have people skills, although I didn't know how to explain what I knew to all the engineers and electrical people that I was working with.
Yeah.
So I was always like the, the people, the person that was the odd one out, you know, the misfit in the management team.
Yeah.
But, you know, now I teach those skills to people so that they actually know consciously what to do. Because where else are they going to learn it? They're learning technical skills, like they'll teach your school how to do accounting or how to speak French or how to do this. But they don't actually teach you, because a lot of people don't know how to effectively deal with people, emotional intelligence, if you like. And it can be taught, and it's quite easy to teach. So, you know, we're talking off air about how, my experience anyway is a lot of engineers don't have people skills, and they manage other engineers through their engineering knowledge and experience, and they lead by that because younger engineers respect that they've got more experience.
Yeah.
But when those engineers are put in charge of people who aren't engineers and they have to use people skills, they struggle because they haven't got any people skills or very few people skills. And that's when often, as I said off air, that they get sent to my courses because you know, they're not used to listening to people that might have as much experience but in a slightly different field that could be useful, and they take it personally, the personal affront that somebody might be challenging what they're saying. So, you know, so it's such a big subject this is. So when you're looking at kids, like, are kids prepared for work, or are they just taught, you know, how to pass their exams, and then they're like, right, okay, there you go, you're in a job now.
There you go, yeah.
You know, and then, you know, are they adequately inducted into the organisation? Do they know what the values of the organisation are? Do they know what that means in terms of how they work on a day-to-day basis? Have they got somewhere they can go if they're not sure about something? And the other so it's such a big topic. If, for example, the manager thinks that somebody's not performing, they're going to start watching them, you know, like really watching them, and that's going to make the person feel a bit on edge. You know, they'll be feeling like they're treading on eggshells because they know that somebody's watching them, and then they're like, well, what do I do? How do I please this person? What do I have to do? And so most people want to do a good job, whatever it is. If they're completely disenfranchised, that usually means that they're in the wrong job, or maybe they've taken the job because it's money and it's not really what they want to do, and so they're just going through the motions. So I think one of the things that managers can do is they learn listening skills and questioning skills, but they also have to develop a rapport and a trust with the person, because the person that they think is underperforming is not going to tell them anything if they don't trust them.
Yeah.
So then, you know, it can't be resolved if the person that feels that they're not trusted, they're being challenged by a manager, they're like, well, I'm not going to tell you anything because I might lose my job.
So you have to, yeah.
It's very difficult.
If you can't scare people into action, you can't scare your staff into action, then you have to recognise, accept that you're dealing with a human being, and part of the mechanics of a human being is you've got to build a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
that's certainly more time consuming and more difficult than,
well, it is,
shouting. But on the other hand, you might actually get a better result in the long run.
Well, you do. But, well, the thing is that, you know, the people skills that I teach, it's like they don't just apply at work, they apply in life.
Yeah.
You know, they apply to how you are a father or a mother or a sister or a brother or an aunt or a boss or how you get along with colleagues. Because, as I say, most of us can get along with other people when everything's going fine. But when things aren't going fine, we don't know what to do. And a lot of people avoid conflict, so it never gets resolved. It gets swept under the table and it's kind of, or under the carpet, and it's just kind of there waiting to come out like a volcano. It's an odd time.
Yeah.
So, you know, first of all, it's really useful for managers to learn people skills, emotional intelligence. Listening skills is really, really critical, because a lot of people don't listen. They listen for what they want to hear and then grab hold of that and come back with something, rather than listening for what the real underlying message is, you know, what the person's really trying to say.
I think I can think of a few bosses in my past who would have said it wasn't their job to listen, it was my job to listen.
Right. So yeah. So then there you go. That's going to go down really well, isn't it? So you might listen, but that doesn't mean to say that you understand. you know, so the only way to really understand something is to use what I call reflective listening. So you say back to the person what you heard them say using their language. And then it's almost like if you get that, it's almost like then you've put their shoes on. So it's not paraphrasing, it's saying back to them what they've said. And then the person goes, oh, yeah, you've understood me. And they might say some more, or then it's your turn to say something. So that's just like one aspect of it, though. But with kids being disenfranchised, it's like, you know, you just look, we've gone through 3 years of bloody plague.
Yeah.
You know, and, then the world situation. I mean, a lot of kids are probably thinking, what the hell, you know, what hope is that? So it's about instilling that there's hope in them, that there is hope for the future, that they can do whatever they want to do, really. It's, you know, the world's their oyster, but they've got to figure out what they want to do, and that's not always easy. I mean, I didn't know what I wanted to do till, I don't know, I was 30 or something, you know.
Yeah, same here, yeah.
And yet kids are always challenged at school, what do you want to do? What do you want to do with your life? And it's like, well, it doesn't really matter as long as they're happy. And who says you've got to stick with one thing? You don't. You know, you might go to a job and really like one aspect of it and then go, oh, I really like that. I think I'm going to pursue that. Like, I really like working with people. So then I was like, oh, okay. And then somebody said, oh, you'd be really good in personnel, as it was then, you know. And I went, oh, okay. So I applied for a job and then I went to university and studied it some more and I got really into it, you know. But that was, I was in my 30s then. I mean, I'd done all sorts of other things before that. And I enjoyed all of them. They're all different. So it's not like people have to stick at the same job forever. They can move on, they can notice what they particularly like about a job and then pursue that aspect of it. Or there might be some hobby that they like to do that they can make a career of. I mean, people can make careers out of anything. A lot of the jobs that are available now weren't there 20 years ago.
So what do you do with a staff member who got a job that they shouldn't have, that they don't actually like? Well, they're not suited to. Do you say to them, "Bye bye"?
Well, it's difficult for an employer because you can't just do, you can't just go bye bye.
Well, no, you can't. No, I mean, it's a silly way to put it.
Well, you could try, but then you'll be in the employment court, you know.
Yeah.
So it's again, it comes back to.
Well, you know what? What often happens is they'll just start being hard on that person until they get fed up, they leave.
Till they leave.
That
yeah.
seems to be the strategy. That's the strategy I've observed.
Yeah.
In my employment life,
I think,
and that's a while ago because I've been in charge. Yeah. My life for a while now, but back in the day.
I think for an employer, they have to learn to be objective as well because, you know, I was saying off air as well, when I was in HR, I'd always have, you know, one of the supervisors or one of the foremen or they'd come in and they go, right, you know, I want to get rid of so-and-so. And I go, oh, and I think to myself, well, here we go again. And yeah. I go, well, what's the problem? They're always late. And I go, well, okay, when were they late last? And it was always like that day.
Of course.
Okay,
yeah.
It was today, okay. And when were they late before that? They were late on Tuesday, okay. And before that? Oh, I can't remember. Okay, have you talked to them about it? No, I just wanted you to get rid of them. It's like, well, I can't get rid of them. You know, have you talked to them? What's going on at home? There could be all sorts of reasons why somebody's late. And often when they did talk to them, they found out that, you know, maybe the wife had been ill or, you know, they had a baby or something sometimes, you know. So they're not objective. They just notice how it's affecting them and then react from that rather than going, okay, what's this person doing or not doing that I can see or hear that I can talk to them about without going, oh, you've got a bad attitude. Because that's what they used to say. Oh, they've got a bad attitude. Okay, well, what's that mean? It means nothing. What do you actually see or hear that tells you that they've got a bad attitude? Well, they're late all the time. Okay, let's be specific then. When were they late? Okay.
Yeah.
And then they'd be stuck because, okay, well, I can't get rid of somebody because they were late this morning and late last Tuesday. You know, that doesn't even make any sense. So, you know, if they're late every morning, then record it. And have a talk to them about what's happening that, you know, might be causing them to be late because it's affected the whole team. The team couldn't go out unless everybody was there, you know.
Yeah.
So and learn, you know, talk to them, find out what's going on, let me know. And then they come back and go, the wife just had a baby and it was a bit dramatic. And you go, okay. So then it was all fixed then.
Right.
But if there's somebody else there, it's easy to come to me and go, oh, I want you to get rid of this person, to the HR person. rather than them dealing with it. And then I just say to them, okay, this is what you need to do. So it's for the manager, it's about be objective. What are you seeing that's telling you that you makes you think that the person isn't motivated? What are you hearing that tells you that the person isn't motivated?
Yeah, well, my experience as a young person was that before they met me, they assumed I wasn't motivated and that I was be lazy and trying to, you know, and there definitely is that, yeah, there's that attitude. I know young people complaining about it at the moment that who I know are good kids, but the people in their workplace are just assuming that before they know anything about them that they're going to be lazy.
Right.
That teenagers need to be give
disciplined
or something. Kick up the backside to get them motivated. You know, that kind of assumption.
Right.
It's infuriating when you're that kid. Like, it's completely... It burns, especially if you're someone who's trying to be a good kid, it really burns that someone thinks of you like that.
And then you lose confidence and lose self-esteem.
Yeah, and you stop... And you also stop focusing on your job. You start focusing on the boss. Where's the boss? What are they doing at the moment?
Yeah, you're running around on eggshells,
And your brain isn't... You're not wiring your brain to think... to wiring it into the job and the needs of the job and the business and what you're doing. You're wiring it into looking out for the boss.
Fight, flight, or freeze mode all the time.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, that's not the best condition to be trying to do anything in, which is going to put you backwards in terms of what you're trying to achieve with your work because you're not focused on it.
Especially a job where you have to make decisions. That's not a good... It's very hard to make decisions when you're in that freak out state.
Exactly. It's impossible, really. You're not going to make good ones anyway. You're going to make ones out of fear.
Yeah, and then so you make worse decisions and the boss gets angrier.
Yeah.
And the boss hasn't realised that they're actually creating the conditions to make you perform poorly.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that comes back. So I said it's a very wide-ranging discussion to this idea of systems, that we're all in a system.
Yeah.
So like you and I are in a system at the moment with the people that are listening as well.
Yeah.
When the boss is talking to an employee, he's in a system, and what impact does he or she have on the person that they're talking to? If they have some people skills, then they could figure that out and respond accordingly. And then what impact does that boss have on not only the person that they think is underperforming, but the rest of the team? You know, are the rest of the team then perceiving that the person is underperforming because of the boss's behaviour?
Yeah.
Because people pick up a whole lot of things unconsciously. Or the boss might be saying, oh, you know, Jim over there, he's blooming useless. He just started last week. He's not doing, you know, this, that and the other thing. And so then it's poisoning the rest of the team. So then the rest of the team start looking at that person and going, well, you know, they're not doing anything. And then the person, again, is stuck in this fight, flight or freeze mode because now everybody's watching them.
Yeah.
It's not a simple answer. Well, it can be a simple answer, and that is learn some people skills and talk to people, because the other thing is it's easy to assume that other people think a certain way. I'll call it mind reading, but, you know, it's not really – well, it is a technical term, really. I think they're mind reading, but they're not really.
As in, what's an example of they think they're mind reading? Like, they're lazy.
I know they're behaving like that because it's not the sort of job that they want to do anyway. Well, they don't know that. They're mind reading it. Actually talk to the person and say, is this the sort of job that you really want to do?
They're guessing.
Guessing, I suppose you could call it that, yeah.
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 They're attempting to mind read.
Yeah.
Getting it wrong.
getting it wrong.
Probably,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's... And there's different types of people too. Like some people actually are pretty phlegmatic about being bollocksed by the boss and it doesn't affect them badly, while others feel it very deeply. Yeah. I know that because I was one of the ones who would feel it very deeply. It would bring me into a state of near dysfunction.
Yeah.
But I'd cover it up very carefully so they didn't feel bad about it.
Mm.
It would, you know.
I think that's how I was as well. I was always wanting to be a good girl and do the right thing. And then if people accuse me of doing something else, I'd take it very, very personally because, as far as I was concerned, I always wanted to do the best job I could wherever I was, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and getting told off for something was, you know, it was terrible. It was worse than being flogged, you know.
Yeah, like I only really got comfortable when I started working for myself, or in this job where I work for a committee and we're all kind of equals.
Mm.
You know, there's no sense that I'm being watched. I'm being listened to, I suppose, but that's the nature of radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just in terms of maybe we could talk about what young people could do if they're in that situation.
Yeah, because there's the thing, because also, for some young people, they do need to change the way they meet the world, I guess, the way they view the world and themselves and find it some hope, maybe.
Yeah. And often it's not that easy for them to talk to a boss.
No, I wouldn't have.
Because of how they're perceived as being, you know, well, they're the boss and I'm a new employee. But I can say that one thing, you know, like when I was first in the workforce, you know, I always used to look up to my bosses until I did something that I thought, well, that's not really the right thing to do, you know, and then they come down in my estimation. But in terms of the way that we think about people, we've talked about this on the show before. There's this idea of a thing called social panorama, which is how we think about people.
Yeah.
And so often with young people, they might, when they think about their friends, for example, in their mind, they have their friends like kind of around them and on the same level as them in the mind's eye.
Yeah.
Right?
Like in terms of height, when you say level, you're talking about the height.
In terms of height. So they'll be kind of around them and they might be, you know, like their best friend might be on the right or on the left or maybe in front or something. And then when they think about the boss might be up high.
Yeah.
You know, like because we talk to look up to people or people higher up in the organisation, you know.
Yeah.
The language that we use tells us where we place people. So if they were to, in their mind's eye, bring that person down to the same level as them, that will make it easier for them to talk to them.
So this is a visualisation thing?
Well, it's something that we do anyway, but we don't realise we're doing it.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I mean, I can say on the radio now is that if you think about, if you're listening now, you could think about maybe your partner and notice where in the space around you you locate that person. So, you know, for some people, as I say, it'll be in front, some people will be to the side, and how far away are they and how high or low are they in terms of, you know, your eyesight in terms of you. So let's give you an example. When I think about my sister, she's kind of about here. So this is about, 30 centimetres away?
Yeah.
And on the same height. Now, she lives in Portugal, you know, so she couldn't be any further away if she tried. But the language we use, I'll say me and my sister are really close.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not about distance. It's about how you think about the person. So if I asked you, you know, where, when you think about your wife, where is she in the space around you as you think about her now? Over there? Yeah. So, and how far away?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. And is she on the same height or same level? Same level as you? Okay.
I think, but like a boss or a parent is more of one that you're going to get that thing of being the height.
Yeah. Yeah. So often parents will have the children lower.
Yeah.
Especially if they're young.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's useful because, you know, when they're really young, they've got to look after them, so it makes sense. But one of the things that I have to do sometimes is I have children that say, my parents still treat me as if I was seven.
Yeah.
And when I ask the parents where in the space around them do they locate the children, they have them really low. So they're still treating them like they were seven because they're thinking about them as if they were seven rather than 17. And we have to go, okay, so let's what happens if you move them up in your mind's eye, move them up to the same level as you?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, so then they start treating them like they're on the same level as them rather than as if they're looking down on them. So we're looking down on people.
Yeah.
All of this, all of the language that we use tells us what we're doing in our head. So for a, you know, just going back to the school leaver, say, they've got a boss that's maybe not happy with them for some reason, and they're reluctant to talk to them because they perceive them as being up high, as a being above them. Mm. So it's like, well, if you could, if in your mind's eye, if you move them down to the same level as you, so that you are on a level, then it'll be easier for you to talk to them. If that it probably doesn't make any sense what I'm saying, but if you try it, it actually works.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think people need to try it to see.
Yeah, it works because this is everything that we do, we locate in space in our mind. You know, if you think about, I don't know, your house. Where's your house in your mind's eye? Up and slide till you see your eye. Yeah.
So you knew better by looking at where my eyes went than...
So you've got a picture of your house, right? And so people go, oh, no, I haven't got any pictures of my house. And I go, of course you've got a picture of your house. Otherwise, how would you know when you got home? Mm-hmm. You have to match up the picture that you have in your mind with your actual house. Otherwise, you'd be driving around forever like a zombie trying to find your house, right?
It's all obvious when you think about it.
Yeah, we make pictures of people. I mean, before the internet, you know, some people that are listening might not know that I've got a dark skin. Like, my father's Jamaican and my mother's English. And so before the internet, people would listen to me on the phone. I'd ring people up. And then when they'd meet me, they'd just walk past me because they didn't think it was the same person.
Yeah.
Because I'd sound English, or probably English Kiwi now. But then I sounded English and that, I don't know what they were expecting, some English rose or something, you know, and I didn't match up with that, so it couldn't have been the right person. One person came in and saw and questioned three other people that I was working with and said, are you Stephanie? And the woman says, no, I'm Shirley, that's Stephanie. He looked at me and he still couldn't take it in.
The brain was just like closing down.
And then he said to the other one, oh, are you Steph? She goes, no, I'm Janine. And he goes, oh. And then it was like, and then there was only me left, and it's like, well, it must be her then, even though I'd said I'm Stephanie three times, all right? Because what I talked to him on the phone a lot, and he just hadn't registered that how I look, because why would he?
Mm.
But we do make pictures of people, and then we'll go, oh, you're exactly as I imagined, or, God, you're nothing like I imagined. And you go, well, what did you imagine? They go, I don't know. But they must have imagined something to do a comparison. So, you know, people that are listening could start to think about this now, because we do this in our mind.
Mm.
We do, you know, make images of people and put them in certain places. Like if somebody's been bullied, it can guarantee that person will be like here. So this is about 10 centimetres from their face and slightly higher. So, then they'll say, oh, he's always in my face.
That's where that phrase comes from.
Because like the person isn't literally standing in front of them all the time, but in their mind, that's where the person is. And when they move them away and put them down, they go, oh, that feels so much better. Mm. You know, and all they've done is done something in the head.
Haven't you also, I remember one time I interviewed you ages ago, you talked about you were working with someone specifically about something like that, and you said, okay, get them down lower and then further away and down lower and then imagine them as a squawking duck or something.
I asked them to something think like, about to move the person away first.
Yeah.
Because they're usually within less than a metre of the person when they're thinking about them.
Yeah.
To move them away, so this person moved them about 3 metres away. And then I said, could you put a different head on them? And they said, oh, yeah, I can put a horse's head. And I went, yeah, because they've been a bit of an ass, eh? And they went, oh, a donkey, that's even better. So then they imagined it with a donkey's head. And then then that changed it immediately, because then every time they thought of the person, it was something funny. And then I said, what sort of voice would they have? And they said, oh, the chipmunks. And so just by doing that, the next time the bully came to the person, she just started laughing and he couldn't do anything but walk away. So we have a lot more power than we think we have. So the other thing is, you know, like often, you know, like I do coaching, as you know, I also do train people. So often I'll get businesses that have got either a manager that needs some people skills or an employee that they really want to keep, but there's something not going right with the employee. Either they perceive that something's not quite right and they're not quite sure what it is. They don't know how to handle it. They don't want to, you know, be taken to court for, you know, the employment relations court. So they'll go, well, would you go and see this person, right? Or there's not enough trust there or something like that. And so I coach those people, you know, to find out what the problem is and what can be done about it. And it stays. So I'm like an intermediary.
Yeah.
So, and that works quite well because the more the things don't go right, the more there's a breakup of the relationship between each person, which just makes it worse. It doesn't get any better unless it's addressed. And, you know, there's organisations that have employee assistance programs. So when I first went into business on my own, I was approached by EAP Services, Employment Assistance Program Services. At that time, they were just based in Auckland, to be one of their coaches. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they would, somebody would ring up from an organisation and say, I need an appointment. So, and then they'd come, and it could be to do with work, it could be to do with the personal life or whatever. And they'd have, they'd be guaranteed three sessions if they needed them. And then the company would get an invoice for that person, but they wouldn't know who the person was. The employee would just be given a number. And, you know, they said it was worth, you know, three times what they paid for it, because, you know, that nobody wants unhappy employees, because an unhappy employee infects everybody else around them.
Mm.
You know, it's not just that one person, then it starts to impact the whole team or the whole organisation. So it was a way for people to come and get things addressed without, you know, talking to the HR manager or talking to the boss or something like that. So, you know, if people that are listening are in an organisation where there is an employee assistance program, that could be a good option for them if they want to try and get something sorted out.
You also get people, staff turning up who just assume that the managers are going to be a problem. All managers are a problem. It's kind of it's a part of a class dynamics of our culture or something. But they just assume that management has no good intentions toward them.
Yeah, and that's true, because in our perception is everything. So if we believe something, that's what we see. So if we believe that somebody's got it in for us, then we'll just notice everything that the person does or says that might indicate that they've got it in for us. When other people will be going, well, I don't see that, you know, because they haven't got the same perception or same belief. So the beliefs that we have affect what we perceive as well. So again, from the manager's point of view, if they perceive, you know, all teenagers are useless and need motivating or need a kick up the bum or something, that's what they'll see. And no matter how good the person is, it won't make any difference, because if that's the perception that the manager's got, that's what the manager sees, and then the employee will perceive that.
But what do you do if the employee is the one with the assumptions that all managers are evil?
Well, same thing. If they believe that all managers are evil, that's what they'll see.
But that as you say, poisons the work environment. Like, how do you deal with that?
Well, again, EAP schemes, come see me. Sometimes it's got to be like a third party that the person isn't going to be frightened to talk to.
Yeah.
That, you know, because the ultimate thing is, if they talk to somebody within the organisation, there could be a fear that they'll lose the job. And so that's what puts them off doing anything about it. They'll put up with it until they can be in a situation where they can find another job where, you know, maybe they're not going to get that perception, or they're going to be doing something that they are more motivated to do.
Yeah, that third party thing's important. And I think a lot of bosses forget, if you've been a boss or a manager for a while, you forget what it's like to be on the bottom of the heap and fearful of the managers. I had one of my first jobs, I think there was a third party involved, and the staff were wanted the staff to sit down and tell the managers about stuff, and one of the managers bosses got a bit paranoid and so he started going around trying to ask us beforehand what we were going to say.
Oh, right.
You know, I was really uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I wasn't particularly afraid of him. He wasn't someone that I was scared of, but he still was the boss.
Yeah.
You know, he was inadvertently, unthinkingly misusing his power to try to find out what was in our heads before the meeting.
Right.
Because he was probably paranoid.
Yeah.
A bit paranoid about it, you know.
So the other thing is you know, in a lot of organisations they have performance appraisals.
Yeah.
Which usually people are scared of performance appraisals, and really, I personally don't believe in performance appraisals. I think that people should know exactly from one day to the next how they're going. They shouldn't have to wait for 3 months, build up all this nervous energy because, oh, God, my performance appraisal tomorrow, I don't know what they're going to say. They should not ever think, I don't know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
So people should be managed in a way that they feel comfortable to go and talk to the boss about anything, to voice any concerns that they might have, and to have it dealt with. And again, this comes back to good communication, saying what you can see and hear that's causing a problem rather than what you think or what you believe.
Mm. I remember one employee, the appraisal, the first thing they would do was they'd say at the start of the meeting, they'd say, so how do you think you're doing, to the staff member?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was a very good way. I had one workmate who had decided that he would, if that's what they were going to ask, he was just going to tell them that he was fantastic.
Right.
I'm doing fantastically.
Yeah.
Which actually was probably a reasonable way to respond to it, but that's not an appraisal. I don't know what that is.
No, well, that's really more of a, that's more about what should be happening. It's like each week, or the person should feel that they're doing a good job, or if they're not doing a good job, they should be told what they need to do to improve. And that shouldn't have to wait for 3 months to be told that, because then it's like this, you know, it's like somebody's dropped a cannonball on them all of a sudden. They've been going along for 3 months thinking they're doing a great job. They have a performance appraisal, and then they're told that that's not the case at all. And then they're going to really look forward to the next performance appraisal, aren't they, you know? In the next 3 months. And so it's a really bad way of managing people. You know, and I don't even believe in managing people, really. It's about creating the right environment so people can do the best work that they can. And knowing that everybody's different, you know, like what some people respond to and feel motivated by isn't going to motivate somebody else.
That's a trick,
you know,
too.
Like if teamwork is important to you, then, you know, and they say, oh, well, you know, your job for today is to go and sit in that corner and you're going to work on all these figures, you're not going to be motivated because that's not what you like. And likewise, if you're an introvert and you really like being on your own and you love figure work, and they say, right, we're going to do this team thing today, you're like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. Everybody's different, and it's, you know, managing is a difficult...
You have to be a psychologist, by the sounds of it.
You have to do a lot of training to be a good manager. You know, and people just usually just get promoted to it and not given any training.
It does feel a bit hopeless. We've got the people coming out of school who don't know what they want out of their lives, and it could be a decade before they figure it out.
Yeah.
And people managing or bossing who are learning that side of things on the job as they go, it's a wonder anything works.
Well, I think people, you know, that they haven't discovered what they want to do. But, you know, the jobs that I've had, each job that I've had I've really enjoyed. But that doesn't mean to say that it's like the ideal job. I think you kind of evolve as you go through. You go, I really enjoyed that job and I particularly like this aspect of it. So I'm going to look for another job where I get more of that aspect. And then you kind of evolve into the next job. But I can't say I've ever had a job that I didn't enjoy. Sometimes I didn't enjoy the managers, I did have one job I didn't enjoy. it was at a hospital and I hated it. But it wasn't the work particularly, it was the people around me, you know. Anyway, I won't go into that. But every other job I've really enjoyed for one aspect or the other and been, you know, quite motivated. I'm probably the opposite. I've got into trouble for doing things, being too,
too proactive.
Too proactive, yeah, and doing things that, and then they've gone, what did you do that for? Who told you you could do that? And I went, well, I just thought it was a good idea. Well, you know, it's about above your pay scale kind of thing. Step back. I go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is why I work for myself, right?
Yeah. It is easier that way. Hey, folks, we've been talking to Stephanie Philp, and Inside Your Mind is the segment, and... Yeah,
it's a big thing, and you've got to look at so many different aspects to do it justice, really.
And I presume the new government's going to be bringing in, you said before we went on the air that you haven't done HR for a long time, so you don't have any accurate legal advice.
No, I wouldn't give people
but
legal advice.
I presume the government is changing things, has things are going to change.
Right.
Coming up. because that's usually what happens when we have a change of government.
And,
like that.
And I think the other thing is with people coming into a job, you know, they might get a 3-month trial. It's an opportunity for them to just try it out and see if they like it or not, you know.
To me, it's how scared of being unemployed you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a big fear.
Yeah.
Well, it was for me.
You see how many aspects there are to it.
Yeah. But it's time to wrap up. Thank you for coming in, Stephanie.
You're welcome.
Did you write anything about employment stuff on your website, insideyourmind.com?
I don't think there's anything. Now, there's quite a bit about how to deal with people, loads and loads of articles about that, but nothing about employment because I'm not in that field anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's all about people anyway, your stuff. Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.